seventh kingdom of life.
The seventh kingdom.
The seventh kingdom.
The seventh kingdom.
The seventh kingdom.
The human side of technology.
So I'm here with Ernesto Ramirez, the editor and
community organizer
for Quantified Self, and he's also in school studying
public health behavior in a PhD program.
And Ernesto is down here in LA with me, and I actually met him through Stan James, who will be chiming in on our interview a little later. I had never heard of Quantified Self until Stan one day, while we were talking, was like, "Hey, I just gave this talk at this meetup in San Francisco about my little life tracking program." And he was like, "It was for the Quantified Self." And I was like, "Oh, well, what's that?" And so that's my first question. So what is Quantified Self?
Well, I have like this canned response that I always feel bad saying, but it's kind of the all-encompassing, like, what is this? So, you know, we like to say that Quantified Self is a global collaboration between the makers and users of self-tracking tools and technologies. So it encompasses what most people do, most people get to QS through, which is our website, quantifiedself.com. The meetup groups, which we have over 80 now worldwide, where people come and talk about, you know, self-tracking and self-knowledge and self-experimentation, and then a few conferences that we put on, one here in the US and then one also in Europe.
And so to really even more break it down,
yeah,
self-tracking, what am I tracking? Like, what does that involve?
Anything. It involves anything. You know, I think at the last conference, Gary Wolf, who's the co-founder along with Kevin Kelly, talked about, you know, the one thing he probably hasn't heard people tracking is, you know, the length of their toenails or something like that. and then just recently we were talking about this, and he found someone was trying to actually use, like, I think toenail clippings to measure some sort of protein in the body related to, I think, bone mineral density or something along those lines. So, like, it's anything. It's from really simple, small stuff. You know, journaling is a form of self-tracking, all the way to the really super high technology, high input devices and tools and stuff.
So in a sense, collecting data about ourselves.
It's collecting data in its most, I guess, widespread form. All the way from like really hard quantifiable data to even, you know, what some people call like qualitative data. So like when you're writing down how you think and tracking your mood, for instance, or things like that, or, you know, pictures and images.
So kind of like a food journal, if you're trying to figure out, you know, a food allergy for one, or, you know, I think just thinking about it myself, clearly a lot of images came up of just like fitness tracking, like when,
sure,
you know, when Ivan Drago and Rocky are training in Rocky IV and they got the numbers and they're tracking everything and they're getting the data for, you know, well, he was able to lift this much, now he can lift this much. And
exactly. And I think the idea of self-tracking has been around for a long, long time. You know, there was, Benjamin Franklin, people always like to quote his, you know, tracking of his 13 virtues, where he did like every day. So like, this is not a new phenomenon, but what QS is really interested in and why it came to be is because the act of actually gathering that data, whether it's fitness data or your weight data or your food or whatever it is becoming easier and easier as technology is getting better and computers are becoming more part of our ingrained everyday experience.
So it's not only, so primarily we have easier acquisition. So just the different types of ways we can acquire this data, from journaling straight into a computer to heart rate monitors to blood pressure monitors. It seems like anything these days.
Yeah. And then it's this, I think it's a combination of the acquisition, but also what you can do and learn from that information. So like journaling, for instance, there's a great website started by a friend of ours, in the QS world, Buster Benson. He actually helped start the Quantified Self meetup in Seattle. He now lives in San Francisco, but he has a website called 750 Words. It's a journaling application. You just go on, you write 750 words every day. But in the background, he's used some algorithms to do kind of some textual mining, so you can kind of get some sort of like little mood report about your mood or your frame up that you're using while you write.
Oh, that's cool.
And then you can pull that out and see, like, over time, like, how things are changing or what you're kind of writing about, you know, over time.
So we're getting more complex ways and easier ways to acquire the data and then linking this in with kind of the pervasiveness of now kind of computing power and algorithms. So it's not only we have more data to work with, but we're leaning into this time where there's more ways to process it.
Yeah, there's more ways to process it, both from a computer standpoint, like just plug it in. Computer has some sort of magic that someone else has derived, and it'll spit out some data to you that says, okay, this is what we know about you. But there's also this rise in individuals creating their own meaning from this data through different ways. So I think the biggest thing right now that I think is really interesting is the use of visualizations in everyday life. Mm. So, you know, for a long time, people were stuck with Excel. But now there's some really interesting things, the way people are actually visualizing their own data. So, for instance, using heat maps layered on top of actual geographic maps so people can see where they're checking in on Foursquare and where they're spending their time. Or there's this really interesting, and I'm not really super technically minded,
sure.
but I don't know how to program it, but there's this great library of visualization called D3. And you can create some really cool interactive visualizations. So rather than just having this static, okay, there's a line chart or here's a bar graph, now you can actually interact with that data and manipulate in ways to better understand what's really going on.
So it's easier to get a sense of really what the data means. So
exactly.
Getting a perspective on it is what it sounds like.
Yeah.
So, that's cool. It just struck me listening to that, you know, the quantified part of quantified self in terms of tracking stuff at a very raw form is the more we can collect the micro,
mm-hmm.
the more then we can see the patterns in the macro.
Yeah.
So the more cleanly in raw input we get just at the micro level, it's how many times do I touch this or how many times do I write this word? Suddenly, when you have all that data and can process it, these macro patterns can become visible that are much harder to see sometimes on the day-to-day moment-to-moment basis, and that seems really cool.
Yeah, it's I mean, obviously I'm biased, I think it's super cool.
Yeah.
But it's not just this idea that you can collect this data and then it's all of it's being there and you can look at these patterns, but you can also use this as a method, and what's used for a lot of people as for experimentation. So trying new things, trying a new diet, actually tracking your weight very consistently, or tracking your calorie consumption by taking pictures of your food, or, you know, doing a variety of different things. Now you can actually have some objective information that says, did this work or did it not work? And maybe some reasons why things are or not working.
Yeah, that was in previous times. I've set really stringent fitness goals.
Yeah.
That was the two most effective times were when I was actually tracking things, both daily subjectively, and then I can't remember the name of the test, but it was a bone density test you lay down and they can track how much fat and muscle are in each part of your body. And the best part about it, which I think really made it work for me, was I didn't have to wonder if it was working.
Mm-hmm.
I actually got data before I could visibly see the results in my body necessarily, 6 weeks in, it was just numerically, things were actually shifting.
Yeah.
It was oh, this is working. And then I got totally inspired to just keep going at a much deeper level. And it seems like this is a cool way to kind of close some of those feedback loops for some of these more challenging long-term, or not even necessarily long-term, but things that are kind of harder to grasp sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, there's, we were at a meetup in San Francisco and I was talking with a few other individuals, why do people do this? Why do you actually engage in the act of self-tracking? And this guy said this thing that it's just stuck in my mind ever since then. He said, it's a really great way to recalibrate my intuition. And like you were talking about with track, looking
that.
At your subjective nature, okay, this is why I feel, this is kind of how I look. That's very different than actually having those numbers of this is what's really going on. Because we all have these kind of intuitive feelings about what's going on with our lives. How much physical activity did I get? How much time am I spending with my loved ones? How much money am I actually spending on coffee? You know, we have these intuitive feelings. But then when we can get this actual objective data, that can really do some wonders about helping us understand whether our intuition matches up with reality. And then if those are different, maybe some ways of how we can actually close that gap.
That's, I've never heard it expressed that way before. And I just love that because it's taking this idea of this implicit knowledge sometimes we have of, yeah, I kind of know I'm wasting too much time on this, or this behavior is leading to this, but it's kind of just an implicit interior thing. And it sounds like self-tracking and quantifying it helps make it explicit in terms of like, oh no, that is actually what's going on. I was right. Mm-hmm. I can trust that feeling now when I'm having it in the moment, or, you know, at the end of the week, I was like, yeah, I think I should have done more of this week. It sounds like you actually can link in the data somewhat, which trains you then to just keep that loop going, where at some point, maybe you don't even need to keep tracking anymore.
Exactly. And I think, I mean, at the core, quantified self is a practice of engaging in that. What's going on? What can I actually learn from understanding myself in a new and more objective way? You know, so, you know, Gary, we were talking about this the other day, and, you know, he's talking about it. And I keep saying, you know, we should change our tagline to this. But what QS really is about is deriving personal meaning from personal data. And that can take, you know, a many, many different forms, whether that meaning is, you know, I want to get more fit, or I want to lose more weight, or I just want to understand how the world is working or how I'm working in the world.
I like that tagline. That's pretty meaningful.
Yeah.
And so at a personal level, I'm curious, how did you find yourself in getting into the quantified self world? Like, what attracted you? What were your first experiences?
Yeah, my first experience was through kind of my PhD program. So in health behavior, like, self-tracking is a cornerstone of understanding and getting people to change their behaviors. And so we were approached, our group actually was approached at UCSD to help start a meetup group. It was put on me because I was the grad student. You know, I had all the time. I had all the time in the world back then. And so I was really drawn to it because I am both drawn to technology and gadgets. You know, I was back then like this reading Gizmodo and those kind of like in gadget blogs, like every day, you know, what's the cool new things happening? And it was this really, really nice intersection of how technology is affecting our own lives. Back then it was more from a health perspective. At least that's what, you know, why I engage with it now. It's just health is a big part, but it's only one part of what really people are engaging with in QS.
So have you personally taken on any self-tracking projects?
Yeah. I mean, I wear a Fitbit, which is a physical activity monitor. It mostly tracks steps per day. So it's like it's a pedometer, pretty highly technical one, but I've been wearing it for, I think, about 2 years straight now.
Wow.
I've missed about, like, I think 15 days. And so it's one of these ways where it helps me understand, like, what's going on in my life. I've given a few talks about like what I found out through the data and things like that. Yeah, it's pretty fun.
Yeah. How has becoming more aware of, let's say, even just how many steps you take a day?
Yeah.
What has that actually done in your life? Like, I guess I'd be curious, like, behaviorally, do you?
Well, yeah. It one of the interesting things is, like, I gave this talk about how moving my apart from a house to a different house in San Diego where I was living at the time, caused, or seemed to, at least if you looked at data, was correlated with about a 2,500 per day drop in steps, in number of steps. Huh. And it was really interesting to me because it was not like I had made this conscious choice to stop moving so much, but moving from this location, and there were some things that happened. You know, I stopped taking the bus and started driving more. I stopped going on walks by myself because I was far away from my friends and started just hanging out with my friends because I was a lot closer to them. All of these things weren't these, like, okay, now I'm going to stop doing this. It was just these things that happened. And then looking back at the data, it made me realize, like, I have to make more conscious choices about my day-to-day activities if I wanted to keep my physical activity at this certain level.
So, yeah, it wasn't like you totally changed your fitness regime. It was just like enough factors in the world in terms of your circumstances that maybe individually you would never have thought, like, well, just driving this route instead of walking, and suddenly I'm not getting nearly as many steps. But when you add that to this, to that, to this, and it sounds like, again, in a cool way, the tracking let you see kind of a more of a macro pattern that was like, well, overall, actually, I'm moving a lot less.
Yeah. And it was one of those things, like, on a day-to-day basis, I didn't feel any different. You know, I didn't feel like, okay, I'm not moving as much, I'm not doing that. But then looking at the data, being confronted with that obvious difference, And then looking back, because I keep track of kind of a day-to-day, like what I've done for the day, and seeing like that the drop off in steps kind of coincided when I moved to a new house and a new neighborhood, I was able to go back and think, okay, well, these are some of the reasons probably why, and these are some of the ways I can address that.
Now, we've been talking mostly about kind of the positive side of self-tracking and how it may change behavior. I'm curious, because in an interesting way, sometimes something as simple as checking my bank account is a type of, I think, self-tracking at a very literal level. And sometimes, like we were talking about, implicitly, I'll kind of know what's going on enough that I explicitly avoid checking it because I don't want to feel the uncomfortableness of having that actual data.
Yeah.
So I'm curious whether in your own tracking or in some of the presentations you've seen, like what happens when we find out the data isn't going well?
I think obviously there's some different ways people can handle that. And I mean, I'm right there with you with your example of tracking like your spending and looking at your bank statements. You know, there's this idea of cognitive dissonance, you know, that you think the world is one way, but in reality it is another way. And being confronted with that fact is actually quite alarming and can cause some psychological, although not hopefully not huge, but some harm to being confronted with the difference between who you think you are and what you really are, whatever that is. Like for instance, I'll be completely honest here. Like I know I have Rescue Time installed on my computer.
I recently installed it after your suggestion. Yeah.
So it's just in the background tracking what I'm doing on the computer. It's on both the computers that I use. It goes down to even like the website level. And I know that, you know, every Sunday it sends me an email that says, this is what your week was like. And I can go in and look at the data, but I know I won't because in the back of my mind, I know I'm going to be confronted with things that I don't want to deal with, which is how much time I spend wasting time on stupid stuff, which stuff that's not being productive. And there is that harm in that sometimes these things are going to show you stuff that you A, don't want to deal with, or B, you know, sometimes even don't have control over. I mean, obviously website, I have control over like what I'm looking at. But in some cases you don't.
Yeah, it just seems like such a powerful coming from a background having worked a lot in kind of the consciousness movement and personal development and transformation and coaching and knowing a lot of people that have gone through that world and gone through it myself. It's interesting just hearing even that explicit example because it's like, you know, the first, particularly in coaching circles, they talk about the first step to, you know, changing behavior is just fully actually feeling where you're really at and embracing like, well, this is the actual reality of where I am. And it just seems like hearing that there's that almost in a uniquely powerful way that quantified self can do where you can really look at down to a very micro and macro level. That's not just necessarily feelings, but like hard data. And this is what's really happening right now.
Yeah.
Before you can change behavior, it seems like there has to be that moment of just fully leaning into, okay, this is where I'm at. This is the data. This is what's actually happening in my life. And it just seems like from that point of view, I can really see how powerful it would be for someone, you know, if they're not really sure what's going on and then they have that moment and then there's that, whoa, kind of mind blown self-identity even kind of like feels a little under attack and crumbling. And then it's like, but okay, that's where I'm at.
Yeah.
And now I can just start from there.
But sure.
Instead of it being this nebulous kind of interior thing of how am I spending my time or what's leading to what, it just helps. I could see it being a catalyst in some ways.
I think a lot of people take QS to be kind of synonymous with like this idea of behavior change.
Yeah.
But, It's not always that. Sometimes it really is just about understanding. So, you know, if you take my example, like maybe it's not really about changing my behavior. It's just really acknowledging this is what I actually do and this is what my life is like. And then figuring out why it is that way. And then maybe later on, like down the line, there could be change if change is possible or if change is actually what's wanted. But in some cases, really, it's just about understanding the world. You know, and I mean, down to understanding your very specific world and what's going on in it.
And so in being part of the actual quantified self organization, like what would you like to see it do in the world? Like, is it, do you want people to understand what quantified self is? Is it really teaching people the tools to start tracking on their own? Or kind of what's the main thrust of having an umbrella organization for this very personal kind of thing?
Well, I think the main reason why there is this organization, why we support these meetup groups. So, going back, like, the meetups are probably the most interesting part of quantified self, because what has happened is, like, since 2008, there was one meetup in the Bay Area started by, like, Kevin Kelly and Gary Wolf. People came and they shared their experiences. This is what I'm tracking. This is what I'm learning from it. And from there, it's grown in the last, 4.5 years to these 80 different meetup groups and these two conferences. But throughout it all, that same thread has been consistent, where it's people coming and sharing their experiences. And those experiences are really about what these people have learned through engaging in self-tracking. And so, like, we ask people to give talks, like, we ask them very explicitly, like, please stick to, like, answering these three questions, which is, what did you do? How did you do it? And what did you learn? Which is a very personal way to look at kind of like the scientific method in your own life and engaging in this practice. And I think what we would love to see is that kind of really take off, is this idea that people can learn some very interesting things about themselves, and that knowledge is transferable. And that transferable knowledge can help to maybe incite an individual to engage in that same kind of practice to see if something matches up in their own lives, or can inspire them to do something new and different. And so I think, at the core of it, we're really trying to hope to see maybe not a cultural shift, but some sort of, I don't know if culture is the right word, but some sort of mechanism where people can actually do this and engage in this practice of deriving personal meaning from their personal data, and then having a place where they can share it and talk about it and discuss, and hopefully, lead better lives that way.
That sounds like a fantastic cause I can certainly support. And yeah, it really strikes me hearing that it's just like an interesting kind of, from a more spiritual and practitioner based perspective, it's like, it's just another flavor of mindfulness, even just practicing being present in the moment enough to even track something. Like, because before you can track it, you actually have to bring your attention to the moment to be aware, to actually write this thing down or mark it or journal or whatever it may be. And that is a really cool way to practice mindfulness, I feel like. And I imagine that by becoming more mindful and just tracking one thing, that over time there may be this side effect of just kind of becoming more mindful in general and present in the moment in lots of areas of your life.
So that's really interesting you bring up mindfulness. At the last Quantified Self conference, our opening talk was actually about QS mindfulness and technology, which at the onset, like, most people do not think that those three things necessarily go together. QS and technology, yes. But once you throw mindfulness in there, it's like one of these things doesn't belong. And this woman, her name is Nancy Doherty, she gave this amazing talk. She's an engineer, and she created this little device that had two EMG, so muscle sensors, that she plugged up onto her, stuck onto her temple, so that it could sense when she was smiling and what she considered like a real smile, where your eyes crinkle and you actually see, a real, really sincere smile. And connected to that was this string of LED lights, so that when she smiled, these lights went off. And so she wanted to be more mindful of her emotions and when she was actually smiling. And she found this, like, even this, like, kind of implicit, the data wasn't being saved or anything like that. It was just this, I smile, lights. That helped her understand when she was actually engaging in that kind of personal and sometimes interpersonal act of expressing some sort of joy or excitement or happiness. And that having that, like, okay, you're smiling right now. You automatically, you're like, okay, I'm smiling. You have that feedback. And then you're thinking, okay, why am I smiling? What's going on? And so at its core is kind of what mindfulness is all about, is that being aware in the moment, being open and curious about what's going on. And so I think it really lines up very well to self-tracking. Even if it's just you're wearing a pedometer and you look at it twice a day, at that moment where you're looking at, okay, I've got 6,000 steps and it's 6 p.m., you're aware of your behavior and you're aware and you think about, okay, what are the things, what's, you know, you're curious about why it is that way. You know, you're being mindful about that act, about of being physically active, of taking steps.
That's, yeah. It's just what a cool way to practice awareness. And I'm so glad to hear that, you know, it's even on your radar as someone who's deeply in the organization, because it seems like they'll probably, you know, especially because gadgets, people love gadgets and gadgets always get so much attention. And, you know, there's every couple months, there's something new coming on the market. And I feel like there's probably, you guys are probably going to be getting more and more attention over the next coming years, sometimes fueled by people just playing with gadgets, but knowing that you guys really understand kind of the deeper level of what's going on behind it is really cool, in terms of it's like, yeah, this is all fun and great, but it really comes back to awareness and mindfulness, you know, in the moment. And you know, in terms of subject matter for our podcast, yeah. Just even in your description, like the interface of how technology actually affects our behavior.
Yeah.
And that kind of continuous loop between the two is like, that's as good a subject matter as I can think of.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's fascinating. You know, I've given a few talks before and I've written a little bit about it, you know, that QS, like our tagline isn't, oh, look at the fun new gadgets. Like, look at the shiny new object. You know, there are already enough people writing about that and engaging with that. And there's, you know, there's conferences. You go down to South by Southwest and there's people, like, that's all they're there for, is look at the cool new apps. And it's great. But I think why people use these things and what meaning they get out of using them in their lives is a much more fun and probably maybe more important conversation to have. And that's kind of where we see ourselves.
Hey, I'm definitely on that train with you. And so if people want to learn more about you and Quantified Self, how can they do that?
The easiest way is quantifiedself.com. It's where all of the writing goes up. We put up videos from different meetups. If you are thinking of, if you just want to learn more about it and want to maybe attend a meetup in your area, there's an entire list there. It shows you exactly where they are. There's one in here in LA. If you're here in LA, you know, you can come on by. It'll be fun. And that's the main way to do it.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time, Ernesto.
Yeah, no problem. Blake, great to be here.
Hi, Jason. That was a great interview.
Yes, thank you for introducing me to Ernesto. I actually have you to thank for that.
Well, it was a nice serendipity that he was up here in San Francisco and just moving down to LA. So he was right on the axis of the Seventh Kingdom.
Yeah, it was perfect timing. I connected with him just when we started the podcast, and it took us this long to actually have our interview. But man, what a fascinating guy and what a fascinating world Quantified Self is.
So Jason, I have to ask, what are you quantifying in your life these days?
These days, I am not doing too much, truth be told. I actually, since meeting Ernesto, probably the most blatant example I've been running is this app he introduced me to called Rescue Time, that just runs on your computer and basically analyzes every program that's open and what URLs you're at, and kind of spits out these charts at the end of the week on, from a productivity kind of viewpoint, where you can rank different apps. Like my coding app or my video editing app are very productive because I know I'm doing work when I'm in them,
right.
Or Facebook.com as very unproductive.
Nice. And didn't you, I remember a few years ago, you did some kind of challenge where you were watching what you ate and your exercise and all that. What was that called?
Yeah, I've done two. During my time living in Boulder, I did two 12-week kind of like fitness intensives where I lost considerably large amount of weight and got in the best shape of my life during those times. And both times, a big part of it was in kind of a QS way, I was doing daily blogging. So, and particularly, I think the second time was where not only I was doing subjective blogging every day, so of what my exercise felt like, what that day felt like, but I was doing I had done the DEXA scan, which,
what's that?
For anyone that wants to get into fitness, if you can find one in your area, it's awesome. But it's kind of like a not X-ray or MRI, but it's this like bed you lay down on, and it takes a scan of your bone density, and it gives you this printout of your body, and it shows down to each appendage, so on your like left and right side, the bone density, the muscle mass, and the fat percentage. So like right arm, right leg, torso, gut, like very specifically, and you have these great numbers you can track. So I did that at the beginning and end, or near the end of my 12-week program, in addition to blogging every single day about here's my exercise today and how I felt, which was mostly subjective.
Right.
But I think it did bring the gift of kind of awareness about the process and the social accountability, which is, I think, a huge part of quantified self that Ernesto and I didn't touch on so much. But what about you? It was actually some of your quantified selfing that got us into this world, correct?
Yeah. I mean, compared to some of the people that I've met at the quantified self meetups, I feel I'm quite a baby quantified selfer. But let's see. I got into quantified self because I wrote a little app that takes my picture every half hour on my laptop, and it also takes a picture of what's on my screen. And that's called Life Slice, and I gave a little talk about that at Quantified Self. And that really made me think about how I spend my time in front of the computer and seeing, you know, how sort of zoned out I look when I'm surfing Facebook or Reddit or something. On the other side, let's see, I use an app called Strava for tracking my cycling. So I'm a big bike rider, and whenever I go out, I use this little app, and it tracks how far I go and how much elevation, and it knows my weight and the weight of my bike, so it can calculate how many calories I'm burning. And it keeps track of how my speed compares to past times, so I can see if I'm getting faster on a certain hill, or as is now the case, I can see how far I've regressed because in the winter I haven't been doing as much, and so my times have slipped back. So I use that sort of on the fitness side. And then since last summer, I've been using an app called Lyft, which is just for daily habit tracking, where I just track, you know, did I do push-ups today? Did I eat fruit today? Did I what are other ones? You know, did I try to write every day? Did I call my parents? All these sort of things. And that's been really given me some new insights into how I spend my time.
And so, yeah, it seems like for both of us, we are definitely using quantified self and kind of and self-tracking from kind of a productivity/habit, I guess, forming way. One of the things that I found interesting the first time I talked to Ernesto, just in casual conversation, was when he was really breaking it down, which we didn't necessarily do as much in this interview, but even talking about how one of the cool things about it is it can take these giant concepts of stuff we want to change, like I want to lose weight.
Right.
And it's like, well, how do you do that? And I think he was the one that was sharing with me. There were people that were doing things as simple as counting how many times they would open the refrigerator door a day. And that's all they actually tracked. Not their weight, not anything else, but just by being conscious of how often they were opening the refrigerator door, it changed their whole relationship to eating, even.
Because, and this is the excellent point you made in the interview, it brings this mindfulness. If you actually pay attention to how many times you open the refrigerator door, it changes your whole relationship to the food and the fridge. It's, you know, you think about how many times I open this fridge today, and do I really need to look in there now, and do I really need that soda or whatever's inside there? And once you pay attention, then change can happen.
Yeah, and that kind of goes into one of the things I enjoyed hearing Ernesto speak to, was how, in an interesting way, quantified self and this kind of technological tracking can help us key back into our own intuition around how much food is right or how much should I be exercising, that sometimes by seeing the data in such an explicit, quantified way, it helps us recalibrate kind of our more implicit and intuitive feelings around these things.
Right. Well, with that Lyft app I was talking about, like I added a habit to eat fruit each day. And when I added it, I thought this is like an easy, I try to keep a mix of some easy habits and some ones I'm working on. And I thought, I'm a healthy eater. That'll just be like something I just check off every day. And it turns out that like I wasn't eating fruit that often. And it totally changed my self-image of what kind of eater I am. And it brought this awareness of like, oh my gosh, I have to make an effort to get fruit in my diet each day.
And I think it speaks to how wrong our perceptions of reality can sometimes be.
Yeah.
And it takes a practice to really tune back into kind of our natural intuition, which in some regards, it's like our senses and our way of processing the world just were not designed for the reality we're kind of in, which, you know, it comes back to this supernatural stimuli thing that we talk about every now and then, where what are even our taste buds are tuned in for just are kind of blown out of the water by the current reality of what we can eat and how easy it is to access it.
Yeah, sugars and fats, and it's so easy to come by now. And for that matter, the companies selling us this stuff are engineering the food to be extra tasty and addictive and attractive. And so in a way, I guess you could say quantified self and tracking is a way to kind of fight back. But I need to keep control of how much I'm eating and what I'm doing. And I can't rely anymore on my own just, you know, what feels good to eat. So if you can use some other technology to fight the technology of the food makers, yeah. That's crazy.
It levels the playing field a bit, it seems like. As we add these, you know, every day it seems like on the tech blog, so to speak, we see a cool new gadget come out that has something to do with some kind of data input or self-tracking or basically quantifying some type of data that's out there that we didn't have previously have access to.
I think the gadget side is actually in a way like a neat hack, at least for people like me who like gadgets implicitly, that if you give me a gadget, I will just play with it. And like tracking gadgets that actually track something good in my life, like eating fruit or riding my bike, it tricks me, so to speak, into eating more fruit and riding my bike more often. And that's fantastic. If I can translate my gadget obsession into being healthier, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's kind of hacking the system and gamifying it to an extent and bringing some pleasure into increasing habits or activities we know are better for us.
Yeah, I think it's it's overall a good thing.
The cool thing I really got about quantified self when interviewing Ernesto was a lot of people do end up focusing on the gadgets and end up focusing on the explicit data that's being collected, which is wonderful and beautiful in its own right. Because the great thing about hard data like that is suddenly you can chart it and map it and see these long-term patterns that you sometimes literally cannot see day to day, moment to moment, second to second. So it gives us a new perspective on how the world actually is. I think I said to him, I thought it was pretty cool that by hyper focusing on the micro, it can give you a better perspective of the macro in a way that in a more accurate perspective of the macro, I feel like, than our minds are sometimes able to do.
That reminds me of one of the most fascinating talks I saw at a quantified self meetup was a guy who he was a semi-professional athlete or something like that. And so since he was in his teens, he had been tracking his resting heart rate, his blood pressure, his body fat percentage, several other measures. And so he was now in his late 40s. So he had 30 odd years of this data. And he showed it on a chart and cross-referenced it with his relationship status of when he had been married twice and had some girlfriends in between. And it was this type of, you know, this daily practice of recording these very micro health indicators. And he could look back and see that he was definitely at his healthiest when in the beginning of a relationship or when he was single and looking in. He could look back and see that when he started to kind of get fat and unhealthy, it was a premonition that that relationship was about to end. And these like big macro things he was learning about his life just derived from the little micro measurements he was doing each day.
This really specific data. That's amazing. That's one of the cool, I mean, we're just living in this sea of data, this like era we're in. Suddenly all this data is becoming accessible in ways that were never possible. And it even reminds me of, you know, reading how these awesome articles about how there's like never been a better time to be a sociologist, because like people are just pouring in these huge data sets to Facebook and Twitter. And I remember I saw one of the cool ones where some lady just analyzed like Facebook status updates in terms of relationship, and she mapped it out, and it was like off the charts that people tend to break up with each other most often right before the holidays and right before spring break.
That's awesome.
And it was just, I just thought that was really cool. It was like this, seeing that macro pattern again, just from all these different micro bits of data.
And that's, yeah, in the past, if you were a sociologist, I don't know what you would do. You'd like survey 20 undergrads at your university and try to build a thesis from that. And now, yeah, you have millions of Facebook statuses or thousands of people and their Fitbit data or their Strava or any of these different apps that are recording people's personal data. It seems like we're going to get a much clearer picture of human behavior from this, right? We're going to have millions and billions and trillions of little data points of how people behave.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because that was one of the things I was going to say, like when we could do a whole episode on this, is like all this data, A, is it leading to a more accurate view of reality? And B, is the consequence that things just run more efficiently? Does having all this data allow us to start changing all kinds of things just to make them run more efficiently? So the efficiency of the whole world kind of goes up. Like even yesterday I saw a cool article that was about how recruiting firms are now using like Moneyball style stat crunching. So when somebody goes to interview for a position, they have all this data set now that people that live within 10 miles of the office tend to hang around longer. How long you've spent at previous jobs actually has nothing to do with how long you'll stay at any given job. So it's like, you know, there used to be this fear about, oh, I can't job hop too soon, otherwise companies will think I'm just going to jump. And statistically, actually, that's not accurate at all. Or that people that had criminal records in their while minors, statistically actually did not translate to any negative consequences in the adult job market. So their feedback for some of these job recruiting firms is, you've been missing these huge pools of possible job applicants that you were just completely writing off for these kind of implicit reasons. But check it out. The explicit data is, this stuff actually has nothing to do with how effective they'll be in their position. And that was just a really fascinating one for me to read about, which in a sense was kind of tapping into this quantified self idea of, you know, the more accurate the data is, the more mindful we can be of what's actually happening.
And this ties into the theme which you and Ernesto touched on, that one of the biggest things people track in quantified self one of the biggest things they track is happiness or mood in general. That this is, which is funny because it's also one of the most subjective things, and there's lots of debates in quantified self of, you know, do you rate the day 1 to 5? There's different dimensions of what's a good day versus a bad day. But people are kind of homing in on the things which actually make their life better. And the data that's coming in is bearing out a lot of traditions, maybe from the religious and spiritual side, that, like, you know, it's not money and it's not having a big house. And it's, you know, it's little things like going for a walk each day. It's hanging out with friends. And it's interesting that the personal data is now bearing that out and perhaps enabling people to live happier, healthier lives.
Yeah, it's really cool. And the thing that really struck me, learning about the world of quantified self and even Ernesto's personal experiences, is how on the outside, it seems like this very exterior focused gadget tech numbers thing. But what it's leading to underneath is actually this state of awareness and mindfulness of just how, what's it, you know, what are you doing in the moment, which ties right into all these great kind of consciousness and spiritual and, yeah, religious kind of lineages that have been trying to teach mindfulness for generations in terms of, you know, oh, you want to change your life? Well, before you change anything, you have to be aware of what you're doing in the moment first. And quantified self is a really cool way to start cultivating that awareness in the moment just by tracking anything.
Cool. Well, what's the website again where people can learn about this? It's just quantifiedself.com?
It's quantifiedself.com. And there you can learn all about the different meetups that are happening in cities all across the nation. And my guess is the world at this point. And I believe Ernesto and the gang are even working on a blog and post cool talks by some of the most interesting people in the movement right now.
Cool. And for this episode, I will post links to some of my quantified self data in the Seventh Kingdom blog where this episode lives.
Very cool. I'm looking forward to it. Well, thanks again, Stan. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And thanks again to Ernesto Ramirez for sharing all about quantified self with us.
Great. And we will talk to you guys next week on the Seventh Kingdom.
Get more information about this episode and listen to previous episodes at www.seventhkingdom.org. The Seventh Kingdom podcast is produced by Jason Lang and Stan James, with audio production by Charles Gamill, and this recording created by me, an unpaid computer program. Thank you for listening.